The Department of Urology at Upstate Medical University provides innovation in patient care, advances in research, and quality instruction in the field of urology, the medical and surgical specialty that focuses on the urinary tracts of both females and males and on the reproductive system of males. Well, joining us today is the brand new chairman of the Department of Urology, Dr. Gennady Bratslavsky, who has come to us most recently from his post at the National Cancer Institute, part of the National Institutes of Health, just outside of Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Bratslavsky.
Thank you, Ms. Cullen.
Syracuse.
Thank you.
So glad you could join us today. So, and I really do mean welcome because you just arrived, am I right?
That is correct. I arrived 2 days ago, and this is my literally second or third day on the job.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. And I guess the weather, at least when you arrived, wasn't too terrific.
I'm somewhat used to it. I'm actually, considering my background, I may have felt that I moved south, considering the fact that I was born in former Soviet Union, but living in D.C. for a while, it's actually a move up north.
For now you're a move up north. Well, you have such an interesting life story, and we're so fortunate to have you. Tell us a little bit. You alluded to the fact that you were born in the former Soviet Union. Where exactly were you born?
I was born in Kyiv, which is the capital of the Ukraine. And I've lived there until I was almost 19 years old. I've immigrated to the United States in 1992, so that pretty much gives my age away. But I came to Albany as my first destination.
Well, let's go back to what you did when you were in the Ukraine. Did you... you had a career there.
Well, in Ukraine, I went to a nursing school. And I graduated from nursing school with a degree of a nurse. And I actually worked as a nurse on a pediatric surgical floor. I also have this nursing degree is somewhat partially similar to a pre-med here, although in Ukraine one could go into a medical school straight after a high school. But most of the physicians in the former Soviet Union did a nursing school before they became doctors.
That's so interesting. So did you have that in mind, though? Was medicine your target goal?
Absolutely, yes, it
was. So you went into the nursing career as a prerequisite.
That is exactly right. So some may consider this nursing degree as a pre-med in the Ukraine, but it absolutely was a stepping stone, which with my full understanding that and the full understanding of my family that perhaps starting a nursing career a little bit earlier would give me an introduction into medicine a bit earlier as well.
Now, do you have other people in your family who were in medicine that inspired you, or was this just your own?
Yeah, well, my grandmother is a physician, and she has certainly spent most of her life improving her own career, working in pathology and then the internal medicine and then going through certain ranks of qualifications to the highest degree that is seen in Russia. But I always have seen her pushing the her own education level up.
Wow.
So that was always interesting to see an older to me, the grandmother going to these courses of improved qualification.
What a role model for
you.
Yeah,
so it certainly was encouraging and a role model, as you've stated. And then also my other great uncle was a urologic surgeon.
Oh,
one of the,
there you go.
One of the professors of urology back in the Ukraine. So I guess I did have a couple of connections to medicine.
Absolutely. So are they still, still in the Ukraine? Is your grandmother still living?
Yeah, so my grandmother is still alive, and she now lives in Kyiv.
Very interesting. And
yes.
Is she no longer practicing at this point?
She's no longer. She is. We just celebrated her 84th birthday.
Oh, God bless her.
And but she still is continually quizzing me on certain aspects of cardiology or even urology, and she still remembers her discipline quite well. Actually, about my grandmother, I'm not sure if this is a good time to mention, but for the past almost 20 years that I've been here, I have always called her before every single test or boards that I have taken.
Wow.
and she would always come up with some very tricky questions that not
prepping
than,
you.
More than once, I literally had to look things up.
Unbelievable. Wow, that was a she's really an inspiration.
Yeah, she certainly is.
Well, so then you were doing pediatric nursing.
Correct.
On a surgical floor, so you had that exposure to
that
surgery.
That is true, yeah. So I spent a few months, actually, a little more than 6 months working as a pediatric nurse in a hospital on a surgical ward. It's a very different type of nursing there than in the United States. The ratio of patient to nurse was about 35 to 1.
Oh, my God.
Unlike 2 or 4 to 1 than here. The nursing rounds are very different, level of care is very different. Nevertheless, still as an experience of a nurse was something quite memorable and educational at the same time.
Yeah, it sounds like a trial by fire almost. I mean, that you really had to, it was very intense clinical care. Right, acute care.
Well, true. One, the definition of intense care is different. Here, there is a lot of attention to detail and documentation that never occurred back there. So I could administer 35 morning injections to sick children because all I needed to do was to make sure that I administered those rather than making sure I document and check everything to the level of degree that nurses check here.
Yeah, that's really changed. And that's actually changed even in the last several decades here as well, hasn't it, in terms of documentation?
Absolutely. It sounds like it's becoming sometimes more cumbersome, sometimes more computer-driven. But overall, I think it's all for the best patient outcome.
Really. Well, stay right there because we're going to have to take a short break and we're going to come right back with Dr. Blatslavsky and we're going to be talking more about how he got to this country and what he's going to be doing here. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen, along with Dr. Gennady Bratslavsky, the new chair of the Department of Neurology at Upstate Medical University. So before the break, you were telling us about your very, very interesting background coming from Kiev and being a nurse first, which is so unusual, I think, in terms of our current, you know, American medical training. Although I think there probably are some examples of people who did something like that, even in America. But what captured your imagination or what prompted you to want to come to America?
Well, when I came to America, I was a relatively young boy or man. My parents were the driving force behind the decision.
Did they come as well?
Yes. So I immigrated with my parents. My parents have thought about immigrating for a while. There are several factors that were involved. Of course, a search for the opportunity for anybody from a former Soviet Union. We came as refugees, as Jewish immigrants, and there are certain opportunities, I guess, my parents have not been able to experience being in former Soviet Union.
Were they identified as Jews? I mean, did they identify as Jews?
So my parents have identified themselves as Jews.
Even while living there?
While living there. We certainly were not a big practicing family of Judaism. Nevertheless, it's not as much as whether my parents have identified themselves as Jews as numerous times they felt that they were identified as Jews by others.
And discriminated against.
It is difficult to say whether they have been discriminated in the sense of true discrimination. We have actually had, I think, a good life, and I would not be honest to state that they have not been able to achieve much in their lives. Both of my parents have the highest degree, but both have at some points have experienced certain, I would say, discrimination, where career-wise they would not be able to progress.
What type of work did they do, or are they doing?
So my mother is a chemist. She's a PhD in organic chemistry, actually polymer chemistry. She was quite well known in former Soviet Union in the area of polymer and radiation chemistry. She has actually numerous patents, international as well, about which she has learned later in life after immigrating, as those were patented by her.
And she had no idea why.
She didn't have her institution has patented those. But that is not an uncommon scenario for scientists, because everything is pretty much a property of the government. And so she was not that surprised. My father has a degree in physical education. As a former soccer player, but had later worked in actually construction business, and that's something that he focused most of his career in the United States.
So when they came here, were they both able to find, you know, similar type of opportunities or within their capabilities? Because often when people come, they have to switch gears and do something very different.
It's a great question. So when we all came, we spoke very minimal English, or I should say almost no English.
Did you have any brothers or sisters, or just you?
It was just me.
Okay.
I'm the only child.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Nevertheless, when we came, we all spoke very minimal English. Neither of my parents obviously could get a job that they wanted, but my father managed to find a job as a soccer coach in one of the local schools in upstate New York, where we lived. And he also worked for the Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Oh, my goodness.
But they also moved furniture with me as we all arrived, while my mother had an opportunity to eventually find a postdoctorate position with Professor Crivella at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Wow.
But her career took off since Dr. Crivella knew much about my mother, and she's now a senior scientist in a company in the Chicago area. She's continuing with her research, and I think she is continuing to be well recognized in her field.
Now, I have to ask you, is your mother the daughter of this grandmother that you were discussing before?
You're correct.
Yes, so that's that's quite a lineage there.
Yeah, I may have possessed some of the genes from my mother's line, but I have to admit my father's side is quite accomplished, I think, as well.
And, yeah, I'm sure.
But it is a nice recognition on your part, Linda.
Do you play soccer?
I do. I used to.
Probably,
but
very well.
The more weight I gain, the less of a field I cover.
Right, right. So that's a wonderful story, actually, that everybody was able to kind of, in a sense, fulfill their dream of something.
Yeah, this is, I think, a family who has achieved this American dream.
Yeah.
And
so getting back to you.
Yes.
So when you came, you had done nursing, so you had some background. So was it the logical step then to think about medical school, and how did you get that going?
Yeah, so this is a great question. So I certainly continued my interest in medicine, and my first stop actually after arriving to Albany was at the Albany Medical College. I immigrated in February of 1992 after I picked up a little bit of English language and on my dishwashing job at Altieri's restaurant.
Oh my God.
In Albany.
Yes.
I actually learned how to walk over to Albany Med, and
amazing.
Had a very interesting interaction at the admissions office demanding my admission to a starting class of 1992, because I felt I was bright enough and my grades were good enough from former Ukraine, from my former institution, to guarantee me an admission.
Amazing.
To Albany Met. I learned that I needed to take to first be able to speak a little better English, to take some tests that I didn't understand. I do remember demanding to see a director of the admissions. Sarah Kramer was kind enough to meet with me and actually slowly explained to me that I really needed to pick up a little bit of a language and get some experience in this country.
So was it largely language that was the barrier? Did you have the credentials at that point, or did you need more?
So I think both. I think I certainly lacked the language, and only when I finally ended up entering Albany Med years later, I appreciated how much I indeed was lacking. The insight has developed over time.
Yeah.
So I remember trying to figure out what's my fastest way to get back into medicine. And I learned that one of the colleges in the area was Siena College. And I visited Siena, and I learned that I couldn't even get an admission in that college. So I started at Troy in the Hudson Valley Community College.
Amazing.
Pretty much de novo. And then was able to transfer on probation conditions to Siena as my GPA was just starting to rise as I was trying to pick up a little bit of a language as I was taking a lot of science courses. And only after Siena, I was able to take my MCATs, which is admission test for the medical
yes.
school, which I again had to take twice with much improvement, especially in the English part. And I actually promised myself the first school, medical school that takes me, I will go to an Albany Med. Was kind enough to grant me an admission.
This is an astounding story, honestly. It's a story of a determination, a story of incredible resilience. I mean, you have a lot to be proud of.
Well, I thank you. It is indeed an interesting story, especially calling Sarah Kramer, the director of admissions at Albany Met, several 4 years later, making an appointment. And instead of showing up in my T-shirt, sleeveless T-shirt, I remember that I walked over to admissions with my little folder. In 4 years later, I actually came in a suit, wearing a tie. And I think that certainly was a very interesting experience.
Oh, quite a transformation.
She told me that she thought I probably was ready.
Incredible.
Looks like my grades satisfied them, and I did all right.
Unbelievable. Well, we're going to have to take another short break. I can't wait to keep hearing more about your story. So stay right there, listeners. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen here, along with Dr. Gennady Braslovsky, the new chair of the Department of Urology at Upstate Medical University. And we've been talking about your incredibly storied background and incredible journey to get to where you are today. And it's amazing to me to come from an experience where you were starting in nursing, couldn't speak the language, came to America, fought your way all the way into medical school in a sense, and now you're chairman of a department of urology. Well, let's go back a little bit because I want to find out more about what moved you into urology. Why did you pick that after graduating medical school? What made you think about it?
So some of the commitments to urology were actually done back in medical school. Of course, the students do rotations. Medical students do rotations. We were exposed to numerous specialties. Interestingly, I have to be honest, I've been interested in several areas of medicine, and most of the rotations were very exciting for me. Surgery itself just seemed to fit best with my personality and my some sort of prior interest of prior belief that I should become a surgeon or want to be a surgeon. Urology itself was partially shaped by some of the research I was doing in medical school. My degree is with distinction research, and my research was done in urologic diseases, particularly dysfunction of the lower genitourinary tract with prostate issues that many men experience. And I've been doing a lot of work with in the lab with Dr. Bob Levin. And
this was all at Albany Medical.
It was all in Albany Med. And this just all came together in terms of allowing me to form my interest in urology. The rotating in the urology department, I think, as a medical student, was phenomenal because of I felt personalities and a very welcoming atmosphere, and overall varieties of fields within the urology.
So it held your interest.
It certainly held my interest, and overall I thought it was probably the most attractive out of many fields. But I have actually contemplated on pursuing other directions.
Interesting. And then you went to and somehow you got involved, maybe through the whole prostate thing, into the kind of urologic oncology. Is that true?
That is true.
And then you ended up pursuing
then,
that.
Yeah. So after medical school, I did my residency in Albany Med. And interestingly, a very strong component of any urology residency is in urologic oncology. And I was lucky to be trained by three urologic oncologists, all that have trained at different institutions. Dr. Hugh Fisher, for example, trained at Sloan Kettering. Dr. Ron Kaufman trained at Duke. Dr. Badar Mian trained at MD Anderson. So I actually was looking forward to every Monday tumor board to discuss cases and hear their own arguments about patients, very collegial, respectful arguments. But nevertheless, I think I was exposed to enough controversies to develop this interest in oncology and the complexity of the cases. And this what made me look into various fellowships in urologic oncology, and the one that I thought would fit me best would be the one in National Cancer Institute with Dr. Marston Linehan, somebody who certainly has contributed much to the field of urology and somebody who is well recognized for his contribution in genetics of cancer of genitourinary malignancies, particularly kidney cancer.
So while you were at the NIH, did you engage both in clinical work as well as research? Were you doing a lot of research there?
That is correct. So the fellowship at the NIH included a significant amount of research. I chose to pursue both, as you have mentioned, in the lab as well as in the clinical aspect. And of course, was involved in some most challenging, I would say, cases. And not surprisingly, many cases that are evaluated by many other physicians in the country or actually in the world are sent to the National Cancer Institute as a tertiary or even beyond a tertiary referral center as something that is either not salvageable or non-operatable.
Like the last hope.
Kind of like a last hope in many cases. Not to say that the NCI is the only place like that, but it certainly allowed me to see and learn a great deal from most complex patients.
When were you first exposed to this whole area of robotics? Because I know that's a fairly new field within surgery in general, but I know in terms of urologic surgery.
Yeah, so in urologic surgery, we just have acquired a robot at the end of my training back in Albany, but I have never had a chance to sit down at the council, and the robot was actually not operational at that point. Bottom line is, about 6 years ago at the NIH, we have acquired a robot, and I was very eager to proceed with learning the techniques that could be performed using the robot. I immediately recognized that robot is certainly a wonderful tool, but I have learned that it was only a tool that needs to be executed by people with a good understanding of the processes for which the robot is being used. Certainly realized the importance of oncologic training in order to use the robot, to use it well, and to provide good outcomes.
There's been a lot of controversy, I think, within the field of if urologic surgery, but in general, about open versus robotic treatment of prostate cancer, for example. Do you have any particular feeling one way or another in that?
It's a tough question. First of all, I am still a big proponent of doing the right operation. Some people have made a phenomenal impact into knowledge of cancer, genitourinary oncology, by being fantastic open surgeons, have performed thousands of procedures in the open way, and in their hands, performing any procedure could be better off via an open approach.
And open, just so for our listeners, open means that they're...
Open would be just making an incision in a traditional way.
Traditional, right.
Without advantages, let's say, of smaller incisions. Outcomes are measured long terms. Most of the procedures in genitourinary oncology are performed for the long-term oncologic outcomes. And I think those are the ones that need to be driven when the decisions are made.
So we need to see whether, in fact, one or the other has a better
advantage.
Outcome.
In some surgeons' hands, the robotics or laparoscopy may allow them to perform a better operation, either because they either did not have enough experience doing open, or they feel that certain parts of the operation may be performed better with the robot. And indeed, certain parts of the operations on prostate, let's say, with the robot, are easier than open. Nevertheless, as long as the right operation is done. I do believe in the evidence-based medicine. As of today, there are no good studies which are randomized, meaning patients are separated into two equal groups according to their risk factors. And nobody has looked at comparing open versus robotic laparoscopic long-term.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly is known that laparoscopy and robotics afford better and potentially faster convalescence, although in certain procedures that is not necessarily even shown using a robot.
So bottom line is, while it may seem in many cases that the ability of the patient to recuperate or recover from the surgery is faster with something less invasive like the robot, we don't know yet. There are not enough studies to prove that one or the other has the better long-term outcome. Is
true.
That correct?
True. And I think it is very important that ability to demonstrate better outcomes is not necessarily the final goal. As long as the patients are afforded a better quality of life by indeed shorter recuperation, by potential less blood loss, by requiring less analgesia or pain medications after surgery, it may actually provide cost saving for the healthcare. It may provide cost saving for the patient and improvement in quality of life. So sometimes what we refer in medicine as non-inferiority, which means one treatment is not inferior to another treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Non-inferiority is sometimes quite acceptable as long as there are other advantages that may be gained by a certain technique or procedure.
So it's really on a per-case basis, as a lot of these decisions need to be made, it sounds like.
That is true. The big fear is using just being comfortable with only one tool.
Right.
And not be able to offer a variety of treatment options to a patient. I think this is where the major concern comes.
Well, it sounds like you also had some very pioneering experience. I read something in your resume that you pioneered robotic surgery on the adrenal gland. Is that true?
Yeah, we have our first World Series published on adrenal series on the robotic surgery of the adrenal gland. We have performed the first surgery on the kidney for resection of multiple renal masses,
wow.
Including the resecting of those from kidney without cutting out blood supply to the kidney, something referred to as off-clamp resection.
And you did all of these?
I did those. That is correct.
Amazing. We only have a little bit of time left. Give me an idea of what you see as the hopes and goals for the department as you now command the ship.
Yeah, it's this is certainly the most challenging part of the upcoming job. I just hope that we can continue to provide an excellent care to community. I hope that we can expand our services. My hope is to be able to bring in specialists to cover wider varieties of urologic fields to be represented, to be able to afford, to be able to afford and give an excellent care to the patients. I think that it's important that we bring up a research to a slightly different level in the department. I certainly hope that we will start several clinical trials in a relatively short time to allow patients to not only have options, but to have a hope for some innovative treatments, whether it will be for prostate cancer, kidney or bladder cancers, but also hopefully for other non-cancerous, non-malignant GU disorders. And we have numerous specialists already joining our groups with expertise in pediatric urology, urologic oncology, minimally invasive, and laparoscopic surgeries.
Wow.
And I certainly anticipate many positive changes within the department in a very, very short time in the future.
Well, it's incredible. Your story is incredible, and clearly you're going to bring an awful lot to Upstate, and we're so fortunate to have you. Well, Dr. Gennady Bratzlavsky, the new chairman of the Department of Urology at Upstate Medical University, once again, welcome to Syracuse.
Thank you.
We have to take a short break again. There's more HealthLink on air ahead. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.